thatgreatbusinessshow.com is brought to you by DeFacto Shaving Oil, the best anyone can get. Made in Ireland, sold worldwide.
Welcome to thatgreatbusinessshow.com, Ireland's best business podcast, according to our discerning listeners. This is episode 47. This week, a person named one of the 10 outstanding young persons of the world is one of the persons we have. We have a business that's going to revolutionize how we all get x-rays. And we have a husband and wife team who have just raised money, trebled their staff, moved premises, opened to 2 new export markets, and still had time to have a baby. Yes, it is That Great Business Show, the home of great businesses. And speaking of great, that was the massive response to the Queen of Primark, Bree Jo Donoghue, who gave us a masterclass on retailing on last week's Must Listen, episode 46. If you missed it, join the 2,000 people who liked it on LinkedIn alone, and those in the Right Trade in London and New York who retweeted it globally by listening back on your favourite podcast platform. Also, a shout out to Charlie Gleason from episode 17, whose Zip Mobility bikes have just closed a 1.3 million euro funding round to expand their e-scooters around Europe. And all of these great stories are made possible through the support of DeFacto Shaving Oil, makers of the world's best shaving oil. Switch from unhealthy shaving foams to all-natural shaving oil, and you will save your skin, your pocket, and your planet. DeFactoShave.com.
That Great Business Show.
So where do we get them, I hear you ask? Because today we are bringing you a simply exceptional, very young entrepreneur, Aaron Hannan from Ballina, Mayo. He is a co-founder of Luminate Medical. I'll let Aaron tell you about some of the many, many, many business ideas he's had, including his latest venture, a medical device to stop hair loss in those undergoing chemotherapy. NUI Galway-based Aaron was named a 2020 JCI 10 Outstanding Young Persons of the World in the medical innovation category. He's also named Mayo's Best Young Entrepreneur in 2019. Wow. Aaron Hannan, welcome to That Great Business Show.
Thanks a million, Conor. Really appreciate it.
Well, we're loving having you because you have a brain the size of this studio. You keep coming up with inventions. Where does it come from?
You're embarrassing me now, Conor. No, to be honest, I would say that I'm really lucky to be surrounded by great teams. And
that's what they all say. You've got the brains.
Not at all. No, I'm surrounded by, I would say, a fabulous technical team at Luminate Medical at the moment. And I think we're working on an amazing mission as well, which makes it easy to bring great people together around it.
What is Luminate Medical doing?
So we're developing a new medical device to prevent chemotherapy-induced hair loss. So I think this is probably one of the most widely recognized side effects that people have to go through, probably in all of medicine, and one of the most feared as well. And what we're trying to do is develop a new patient-centered wearable approach that can reduce drug delivery to the hair follicles while chemo is active in a person's bloodstream and then prevent that hair loss from ever occurring in the first place. So no more dealing with wigs or no more dealing with kind of long treatment times. We're really focused on a patient-centered solution that can help people just live their life while they're going through cancer treatment, to have a sense of privacy and a sense of ability to control what the outside world sees of them so that they can deal with their treatment the way that they want to.
And how many people go through this around the world every year?
So it's actually a massive figure globally. So there's over 4 million people every year that lose their hair because of chemotherapy treatments. So it's actually a massive proportion of cancer patients are dealing with this problem. And it's highly traumatic for most people. In fact, over 80% of people are choosing to use a wig or some other form of head covering to deal with this need. So there's quite a lot of action happening about this need in terms of people looking for solutions already. But there's very little available to them in terms of effective preventative solutions to this need. It's all retroactive.
Where is Luminate Medical at the moment with this?
So we've just finished our phase of preclinical development. So it's actually a really, really exciting time for us at the moment. So we've just finished preclinical animal studies, preclinical human studies in Galway with healthy volunteers. And the next phase for us really is to raise investment and to start expanding the team. So we're actually actively hiring at the moment for our R&D staff to go and try and build the future of cancer treatment.
I've got a big fat smile on my face for one reason. Aaron Hannan, what age are you?
22 now, going on 23.
Well, I'm glad you said the 23 bit because you're making me feel so inadequate. because this is not the first thing that you have created. Where does this all come from?
I would say that I'm really lucky to have been inspired from a young age or surrounded by a young age by people who are really interested in building things.
Ah, come on. There's something going on in your head that is not going on in most of our heads. It's fantastic.
I really appreciate it, Conal. But no, to be honest, like I've been surrounded by people from the start who've been interested in building the future. And that's
because
what I
would
say.
Because this is not your first thing. Tell us about some of the other ones.
Yeah, for sure. So when I was in school, I suppose I got my first patent from building a device.
School? What age were you?
So I was 16 years old, patent. Starting off on building medical devices and getting interested in that area. So at home, we were part-time carers for my grandfather, Joe, my mum's dad. And for pretty much all of his life that I knew him for, Joe was affected by having a stroke. And so he had post-stroke paralysis, which was pretty severe in his left-hand side. And so that meant that he wasn't able to do basic personal care tasks for himself. And that was something I guess I felt very passionate about because I could see his internal struggle with that. Every time he wanted to shave, for example, you know, he would pick up the razor by himself and attempt to do it. And then we would have to finish it for him. And I could feel the sense of how that wasn't what he wanted, how that might have felt degrading. So what I wanted to do was try and come up with a system that could help him do that independently. So my first innovation, I guess, was to build Enable Arm, which was a headset, a robotic voice controlled headset that could shave people automatically by voice command. And so when I went to college, I kind of started building that first of all as a technologist in school, got my first patent. And when I went to college, I decided to turn that into a startup and to build a small team around it. And through that process, learned a lot of lessons about, you know, building products for great clinical need, but needing to understand the market.
So let us go through your learnings. Even if you're only 22, you've got some real learnings because what happened was that didn't work. Why didn't it work? Why didn't it see the light of day?
I think it's really interesting, you know, as a technical person coming into startups, you know, we often think about like building great technologies and even for very worthy clinical needs. But there's a third part of that Venn diagram, which is there a market opportunity there? And it's crucial for technical people, and this can be hard for us to understand sometimes, is that, you know, even if you fulfill those two criteria of great technology, great need, if there's not a great market, you can't have the impact that you want to have. And that was a really hard learning for me at the start of my career, but one I'm really glad that I had.
And what was the process of finding out that there wasn't a market for it?
I think it's a process, first of all, of customer validation, going out and actually speaking to customers, recognizing that maybe there isn't the widespread of customers you initially thought might be there. And second of all, it's actually a process of understanding what's an investable business. So when you go out and try and raise funding for your business, you're not just trying to promote to investors that you've got a commercially viable business. You've got to promote that you have a venture return business. And for a lot of businesses, or for most businesses, that isn't true. And so it was important for me to understand at an early stage and to learn from that investment process that, you know, it's not just good enough to have a viable business. It really has to be something that's going to give venture scale returns.
At what age were you when it didn't work?
So I was 19 when it didn't work and had to pick myself up after that and learn the lessons.
What was it like for you? 19? I mean, you know, you're a vulnerable young fella.
Yeah, I mean, it was a really interesting experience. So I actually left college after my first year to go and pursue that full time. So it was really all colours to the mast. And yeah, it definitely takes time to process that and to understand, you know, to actually commit to making the decision that, okay, maybe this isn't going to work out. Especially when it's something that you've invested a whole lot of your own time and energy in and taken a risk like I had. I was really lucky that I got invited to work at the Translational Medical Device Lab in NUI Galway to work around people who are interested in researching and building products that would improve patients' quality of life, which was what I was really, really interested in. So I was able to bounce back by going into that role and working alongside people who were working on the next generation of medical devices. And through that, I got to consult with some startups to learn about how they were approaching building the future. I got to lecture at some conferences about, you know, the process of building medical devices and lecturing researchers on how to understand market dynamics and research topics that were more likely to result in market-changing innovations. And through all of that process, I got to meet my now co-founders and start looking at new and interesting needs.
You better name those co-founders, otherwise they won't love you anymore.
Absolutely. So I'm really lucky at the moment to work with Dr. Barbara Oliveira, who's my co-founder and CTO at Lumina Medical, and also with Professor Martin O'Halloran, who's professor of electronic engineering and also an executive director of BioInnovate at NUI Galway, the biodesign program. So through working with Martin and Barbara, I was able to identify this need for cancer patients around chemotherapy-induced hair loss, but also through working with them from a technical point of view, build a great solution.
Now, you say you were able to identify it. I'm always interested in whether people find the next best mousetrap or whatever. What were you doing or what were you reading or looking at that you said, you know what, there's an opportunity in this?
I think there's a number of factors that helped us identify this as a need. So first of all, Barbara, through her PhD, was working on the development of a new technology to detect breast cancer. So an alternative to mammography that was based on microwave imaging. So she was actually actively working with breast cancer patients at the time, and she could see a lot of the needs that they had. At the same time, I obviously had my interest in quality of life issues around all types of different treatments and medicine. And so we were doing focus groups with cancer patients to understand their needs and look at new medical devices that we could come up with. And then we, through that, could see how much of an impact that, that chemotherapy-induced hair loss was actually having. It actually blew us away that a side effect of treatment was more impactful than a lot of the actual cancer itself. So that was really what drove us to want to look at a new solution. And at this point, I have to also mention Dr. Annette Kent, who is one of the previous BioInnovate fellows at NUI Galway and a real source of inspiration for us in our project. Annette was already researching this need and developing potential solutions for this technology when she was a BioInnovate fellow at NUIG. And so the kind of coalition of all of those different factors came to us deciding to work together on building a new solution for this need.
How expensive is this product, or might it be if it makes the light a full light of day?
So it's something that's actually really interesting is how do we model this out? Because we're very much a med tech company, so we're in the clinical phase of development at the moment. So we don't exactly have a massive commercial presence inside the company. We're very much an engineering company. So it's about trying to build the ideal solution for the market and understand what the market wants. We're kind of almost unlike a software company where you launch it and figure out. We have to do a lot of detailed planning in advance. And so we have time to kind of shift the product into various different positions within the market. What we've decided to focus on is trying to deliver a product that is going to be accessible for patients. So a lot of the existing products that are out there at the moment are simply priced too high and are too difficult to use. And so they're not widely used by many cancer patients. What we're trying to look at is how much are people spending on wigs, and can we provide a solution that's competitive to that, that allows them to avoid the trauma of dealing with hair loss.
So wigs are expensive, aren't they?
They are. Like the average patient spends about €1,000 on a wig, which is crazy. One wouldn't have thought that, but that's the aim then that we're going for, is to try and deliver something.
And once they get better, hopefully, that those wigs are chucked.
Absolutely, yeah. So that's something that just, you know, sits on the shelf then. A lot of people do donate them back to cancer charities, which is great. So we're trying to provide something that's competitive to that as a value prop.
Describe your solution. It's like a helmet or a...
Yeah, so we describe it as a cap-like wearable device. So we're very much focused on portability, usability, and aesthetics for our patients. You know, what we're very much focused on is not trying to create something that looks like and acts like a medical device. It should be something that feels very natural to use. It shouldn't be foreign to people. So our device essentially sits on the user's head. They wear it before, during, and after every chemotherapy session. And it applies a light compression therapy to the surface of the patient's head and then limits blood flow to the hair follicles.
And once you've done your chemotherapy session, you whip it off and go off again, or?
Yeah, so it's got to be reused at every chemotherapy session. So the patient's going to have to own it and bring it with them. But ultimately, at the end of their chemotherapy journey, they'll be free to go on, live their life, and they'll have retained their hair.
And give us an advanced preview of this. What are your studies showing? Are you managing to keep people's hair?
Yeah, so we just ran a preclinical animal study, which worked out extremely well. So we were able to prevent hair loss across a number of different subjects.
Prevent, or lessen?
So absolutely prevent in the treatment areas, which was really, really exciting for us. And then working with human studies recently, been able to show significant reductions in drug flow to the hair follicles, preventing that access of drugs to the hair follicles.
Because that is the problem, isn't it?
Absolutely. That's the problem, is that you've got these cytotoxic agents that are floating around the bloodstream. And we've been able to do that more effectively than existing cooling-based approaches.
What's the future? Will somebody zoom in or swoop in and take it away? Or will some spies come in and steal your ideas? Or what'll happen?
So I think one of the things that we're actually really confident about is the future of where cancer treatment is going. Oncology is actually one of the most rapidly growing areas in medicine, if not the most rapidly growing area in medicine at the moment. Drug companies are investing massive amounts in oncology right now. It's a real, real growth area. For us, the focus is going to be about trying to make sure that we can serve chemotherapy patients as they move on to regimens that also include things like immunotherapy. And we've seen a lot of the new immunotherapies that come onto the market are also causing issues like alopecia. So our product remains as relevant as ever. And in fact, actually, chemotherapy use over the next 20 years is projected to increase by 50% around the world.
Unfortunately, because I did ask you this when we were chatting on the phone, as a bald man, unfortunately, yours is not going to bring back what has long gone on me.
Unfortunately not, but I think the general area of cancer side effects is something we're really, really interested in. So beyond hair loss, we're also looking at issues like neuropathy or chemotherapy-induced infertility, which can be a huge issue for men and women. So we're really, really focused on the next generation of treatments that allow people to live more full life while having cancer.
And remind me, what exactly is your training?
So my background is I'm a software and electronic engineer by training, I suppose.
But where does the medicine part come in?
It's pure interest for me, to be honest.
I can hear it. I love it. But like, it is fascinating. Your brain is like, I don't know, does it ever stop?
I'd say now the people around me say it never stops, but it does. It does switch off sometimes.
So what else are you working on, and what else would you like to work on?
I think for me at the moment, it's just all about trying to end chemotherapy-induced hair loss. That is the number one focus for everyone on our team, from when we get up in the morning to when we go to bed at night.
Is that a long day?
It is. It can be. At the moment, we're in the US accelerator, Y Combinator. We recently joined and announced.
We shouldn't skip over that, because I know about Y Combinator. Not everybody gets into Y Combinator. That does mark you out as being special, doesn't it?
I mean, it's fantastic to join a program that's counted Airbnb and Dropbox and Stripe as part of its alumni.
How did you get in there?
Through a long, arduous interview process, to be honest.
Did somebody apply, first of all? Or?
Yeah, so we had to apply. We applied back in March and got an interview in May. And then within a week, we had to make a decision if we wanted to join or not.
That was a quick decision, I'd say.
Yeah, to be honest, like, as a team, we pride ourselves on being thorough. So we don't make decisions incredibly quickly without thinking about them. So we took our time to think about it and we decided deliberately we wanted to do the program.
I'd say you probably did. And what has it taught you? What areas has it helped you on?
I think it's actually really hard to understate the impact that Y Combinator has had. Really hard to overstate the impact that they've had. It's been incredible in building everything from our relationship with investors and our ability to raise funds to everything, to how we actually develop our product technically and de-risk it. So through Y Combinator, I would say we've become a more formidable company. We're more aggressive and we move quicker.
Explain to people about what Y Combinator delivers to you, or how is it so effective? What do they bring to the party?
So formally, Y Combinator is a 12-week program, but really it's, I suppose, a community that your company joins for the rest of your company's journey. Through being part of that community of, you know, like 6,000 founders, that includes the likes of the founders of Airbnb or Stripe, it really gives us access to so many connections, but also to a community of people who are used to acting quickly and used to building things aggressively. So through being in that mindset and being really focused on growing our company as quickly and as fast or as effectively as we can, I think it makes us better founders and a more formidable team.
Now, I'd have a view on this, but it's my view. But why did they choose to take Lucidate Medical on into Y Combinator?
So I think the reason they would have chose Luminate is, I think as a team, we're thorough. We make good decisions, or we make the effort to make good decisions. And also that we've built a technology that can really dominate a new and growing market.
What about funding? What are you going to do? What are you doing? What have you done?
So at the moment, we recently secured grant funding from Enterprise Ireland through the Disruptive Technologies Fund. So €2.1 million coming to Galway and Shannon as part of our consortium. Yeah, fantastic
party
news.
Party time.
Absolutely. So really excited about that. And then also looking to combine that with a private raise at the moment.
Of how much?
raising $2.5 million at the moment, focused on the US market, but also talking here at home as well, trying to get as many people as we can involved.
And when you're doing that, do you go through the Y Combinator alums, or, I mean, each one of them probably could dip into his back pocket and pull that kind of money out?
Yeah, I mean, we've certainly got a lot of meetings lined up with Y Combinator alumni, but also more broadly, internationally as well, looking at the markets that are really important for our need and figuring out, you know, what investors can add more than just the finance.
Which is called smart money, of course, yeah?
Absolutely. And it's all about, I suppose, who knows the markets we're going into and what can they do to help us get there.
So Team GBS, that is us, we always like to ask, how can we help? Is there anything we can deliver to you that would help?
I think for us at the moment, the main focus is hiring alongside the investment. So to reach out to those people in the GBS network that are interested in joining a new and exciting up-and-coming company that's going to change cancer treatment.
What kind of positions are you trying to fill?
So at the moment, we're advertising our R&D manager role, and soon we'll have senior R&D roles available as well. So we're looking for people who've built medical devices before, who have built impressive things before and want to build new medical devices.
And they have to be under 19 years old.
There's no, absolutely no age restrictions.
I should hope not. There's only one of you, Aaron, I can assure you. Listen, before I let you go, you know that we ask one final question, which is, who would you hire in a heartbeat?
So I'm going to go with a close friend and someone who's recently taken a job that means I can't hire him, but I wish I could. So I'm going to say Professor Declan O'Loughlin, who is employed at TCD Dublin. He's a professor of electronic and electrical engineering there. Declan's probably the smartest person I know.
That is some recommendation, I can tell you.
Declan's definitely the smartest person I know and a fabulous engineer and someone I'd absolutely hire in a heartbeat if he were available.
But you said he'd just taken another job. Declan, if you're listening to us, change your mind. Hop on to Medical Illuminator. It'll make you millions. Change the world. Make the world a better place. Would that be true?
Absolutely. Yeah, that's definitely our sales pitch for sure.
Well, I've actually tried to change his mind, but I don't know whether he's going to listen to me or not. Aaron Hannan of Luminate Medical. I'm sure we could have asked you about lots of other ideas that you may have. You will, I'm sure, come back to us if we can help in any other which way of bringing you to the attention of investors. Do remember that we also have this close connection to the Ireland Connecticut Business Council. They are mad keen for companies like you to base themselves in Connecticut, and they also have an investment fund now. So if you want to know more about that, look up the Ireland Connecticut Business Council. Aaron Hannan, thank you so much for joining us on That Great Business Show.
Thanks, Conal.
ISME is the independent SME association, looking after the interests of all types of businesses across Ireland. ISME membership includes invaluable HR and general advice, training, promotional tools, members' discounts, events, and networking with fellow SMEs. ISME membership starts from €195 with easy pay options. ISME. Join today at isme.ie or email membership@isme.ie. ThatGreatBusinessShow.com is brought to you by De Facto Shaving Oil. The best anyone can get. Made in Ireland, sold worldwide. That Great Business Show.
Sometimes my guest introductions write themselves, and sometimes, if I'm lucky, they're written by the guests themselves. This, for example, is what Mitchell O'Gorman, who is CEO of X-Wave Technologies, posted on LinkedIn about coming on to this show. Really looking forward to chatting on That Great Business Show with Conal O'Moran this week about our journey with X-Wave Technologies so far, our big plans for the future, and about how little I know about what I'm doing. We'll share it when it's ready, unless I make a holy show of myself. I love it. Mitchell has a huge background in the advertising industry, but is now running a software company that says it saves lives by ensuring that patients get the best test first. Mitchell, first of all, welcome to That Great Business Show. Second, thanks for writing my intro. Third, what does X-Wave Technologies do?
Firstly, thanks for having me on. I'm well prepped to make a show of myself. I'm looking forward to it. No problem in writing the intro. And the third question is, as I said, we our mission is to save lives by making sure that patients get the best test first.
But not any old test. What tests are you talking about?
So the problem that we're looking to solve is approximately 30% of radiology scans are inappropriate for the patient's need. So we have developed a smart radiology referral platform called XRefer that uses inbuilt intelligence to support a doctor, a GP, a hospital consultant in ensuring that their patient gets the best test for them at the right time.
One third of tests are a waste. Waste of time, waste of money. How come?
I suppose one of the big challenges with healthcare and with radiology in particular, it's a very fast-moving, technology-wise area of healthcare. So it's very difficult, particularly when you look at advanced imaging like MRIs and CTs, and those are the scans that everybody wants. But they move so quickly, and actually the guidance around them moves just as quickly. What is most appropriate for a female at a certain age, given these clinical indications? What's the best scan for them? And it changes quite a lot. So it's very difficult for, it's difficult for radiologists themselves to keep up, but it's also difficult for the referring radiologists, who would normally be a GP or a hospital consultant, who have their own areas of specialism, to know. So I suppose we're there to support them in that decision-making process.
I would have imagined, and of course I'm always wrong about this, that this would have been done a long time ago, no?
There is a lot of competing priorities in healthcare. So it's a fascinating industry that I've somehow wandered into.
We'll get on to that because I am so interested in that. But I want people to understand exactly what this is. A very important software because some of the connections that you've made into Europe, we'll get onto that in a second as well. Let's just keep on the technology.
Yeah.
It is very important for medicine.
Yeah, we think so. We think so. We think that clinicians are overworked, under-resourced. And any support that they can get to help them in their decision-making process, again, particularly in an area that evolves so quickly as radiology, would be very welcome. And really, the two big winners are the patient. So by ensuring that they get the best test first, it means that they're diagnosed much quicker when there is an abnormality in their scan. Their treatment can begin quicker. Their prognosis is a lot better. But also, it's a huge saving for health payers, for health insurers. There's about between 500 million and 750 million spent on radiology in Ireland every year. So if you extrapolate the savings that we can bring to the system, you're looking at hundreds of millions
every
year.
Because it's a third off.
Yeah, I mean, it's not that we're going to be able to save every one of those. But the data that we have seen so far and the data that similar initiatives would have seen so far is a saving of about 15%. And this is a global problem, by the way. It's not just an Irish problem. So if you look at that 15% as a benchmark saving, you're still looking at hundreds of millions.
And if you're saving 15%, you're obviously going to take 10% of that because you're in business.
Yeah, we are in business. The return on investment that we feel and are very confident that we're going to be able to deliver to health systems is significant. On the one side,
significant is one of those words that makes my eyes glaze over because it means nothing. 10%, 20%, 40%, 60%.
We'd estimate in the Irish healthcare system that we'd probably be delivering a 60x return on investment.
That's
for
all right.
Using our platform across the system. So we, as a cloud-based platform, we're actually quite we're not that expensive to implement and to scale and to store all of your data. So it's not as if there's a lot of hardware that comes with it. We're based in the cloud.
And the Europeans love you.
The Europeans love us and they will love us more. So we're very lucky that we have a strategic partnership in place with the European Society of Radiology. We use their guidelines and we've incorporated them into our referral platform.
How many radiologists are there across Europe?
So the ESR themselves, the European Society of Radiology, have over 120,000 members. They're
it's
the biggest radiological
you
society in the world.
Can you imagine that there are 120,000 radiologists? Well, You know, yeah. If I asked how many bread bakers there are, I'm sure it's into the millions. Yeah.
Well, I mean, their members would be radiologists, radiographers, and people who work across radiology teams. So again, I've gotten to know the difference between them.
Which brings me neatly into Richard O'Gorman. Are you a radiologist or a radiographer?
No. There's times I wish I was. But
have learnt a lot very quickly. What was your background?
Yeah, I've had to learn a lot, and I'm still, you know, in the middle of my learning journey. I don't think it never ends for any of us, but particularly in my case, it's been quite steep over the last 15 months. My background is originally as a business consultant, digital marketing, digital strategy, and then I moved into media. So I would have worked as head of advertising innovation for independent news and media, and then more latterly as managing director of Kantar Ireland on the media side. So it's pure marketing and media.
So I can see the media. No, I can't. No. How did you end up running a radiology software startup? I shouldn't maybe call you a startup, because you're a little bit ahead of that now.
No, we're still very much in startup mode. I was having a lunch with a friend of mine.
That's all the people in advertising ever do.
His name is Stephen Courtney. He was brilliant. He was. I worked with him as part of a spin out that I managed from independent news and media called Offscript, and he was our creative director. He was telling me about a friend of his who was a doctor. I was stunned that he had a friend who was a doctor in the first place. And he told me that they were out in the playground with the kids, and his doctor friend was asking me if he knew anybody who would be interested in and able to lead the digital health startup that they were creating. Didn't necessarily need a background in healthcare. So I know, luckily for me. So Stephen asked me would I meet him. So I met him. And when Stephen had said, it's in the field of radiology, I genuinely had paused for a second and thought, pretty sure that's the scans, like x-rays and stuff. Luckily enough, I've never had very many health problems, and my family haven't, so I haven't become too familiar with the health system. But I really knew very little. So I met with Ronan, who is his friend, and Ronan laid out the problems, multiple problems that exist in their field of work, and
such as
obviously number one, the making sure the patients get that best test first. Number two is the problem of efficiency, different systems, still a lot of paper based systems in use.
I cannot get my head around this paper.
Yeah,
2021.
Yeah, there's a really a range of systems that are in use across healthcare. There's still a lot of paper, still a lot of fax, that were brought back into play when
faxes now, not yeah, facts.
Yeah, no, still a lot of fax machines and the like, yeah, that were brought back into play during the recent cyber attack. So I suppose they were lucky that they still did have those systems to stand up. There are some digital systems, and there's some very good digital systems. But for me, as Ronan was talking to me, all I saw was opportunity, given my background from different industries who have a more mature technology adoption. I could see a lot of really quick wins, or so I naively thought at the time.
I do love a story of a good pivot. Now, pivoting from the advertising industry into this, was it really easy or?
It was not easy.
What were the difficulties?
It still is not easy. And again, I like to think that I'm naively optimistic in my approach to things, and definitely that naivety stood me in good stead. You know, I suppose you tackle a problem one step at a time, but you know, the more you learn about the how difficult it is to get into health, and again, it's not always the people with the best team and the best product that wins in health. It's
what does? Who it, does?
It can be quite, I suppose, again, looking at health systems and the resourcing of them, everybody's overworked, right? And you're also dealing with life and death issues. So there is that level of importance and the inherent conservatism in decision-making that comes with that. That means that they're not just going to jump on the first piece of technology that comes out of them. And for us, really, we need to and are lucky to solve a lot of problems, not just one problem, because people aren't going to jump on a new platform that just solves one problem. We solve a lot of problems, not just in appropriateness, but also in efficiency. So we are live with our first pilot with the support of the HSE Digital Transformation team. And the data that we've seen but on both sides of the house, which is the appropriateness, really positive impact on the appropriateness of referring, but also on the efficiency, we've seen a 99.9% reduction in the time that it takes to create a vet protocol and send a referral. So which is great news for patients. So we're able to provide a lot of solutions to a lot of the problems that exist, both in appropriateness and efficiency.
So talk to me about the actual business. It is going to sell, or is selling this. It's a SaaS, isn't it? It's software as a service.
Yes.
And you are trialing it in Ireland.
Yes.
Have you gone beyond the shores yet?
Not yet. So we are in strategic partnership discussions with the world's fastest growing teleradiology company, who have a significant share of the UK market. So we have a couple of tentacles into the UK market. Number one is we have business cases in place there for a couple of trusts who are looking to take our technology. But we also plan
adopt.
On growing.
I don't think they want to take it.
Yes,
they want to adopt.
Yes, they want to adopt it and give it a good home. Really, our strategy and our growth strategy is around partnerships. And again, you know, this is something that's worked very well. And for me and other industries, being very open and really talking to everybody, even when they might seem like a competitor, everybody has the potential to be a collaborator. And that's brought us to a point where we have these a couple of strategic relationships and partnerships, such as the European Society of Radiology, such as this teleradiology business, and we're looking to partner with them to move quickly into new markets.
So, as I mentioned, it's a business.
Yes.
What's the big vision for that business?
So,
are you going to just concentrate on radiology, or have you got other?
No. So,
this is, I was going to say radio. This is podcast. He's got a big smile on his face, and I can tell from that I've hit a little gem. What have I stumbled onto here?
I have to be careful about what I say here. So,
oh no, you're amongst friends. It's okay.
Yeah. So, over the past couple of months, and I can talk about it now because we submitted our patent application to the European Patent Office on Wednesday. This is the first time that I'm able to talk in any meaningful way about our long-term plans. And at that, I still can't talk in great detail about them, but we have figured out a way where we can combine big data, artificial intelligence, natural language processing to be able to predict what might be wrong with the patient and to be able to offer them the best test for them based on real data. And we will be doing that initially for radiology, but eventually for all medical diagnostics. So that's our big picture. It still comes back to this mission that we save people's lives by ensuring they get the best test first. So that never changes. But the way we go about that is going to dramatically change. And we see a huge opportunity in the IP that we've built up and will be securing around that.
And my next question is, what's this we, Tonto? I mean, is this you, or is there a software development team somewhere? Or
it's me. It's our lead software engineer, Martin, that we hired at the start of this year. It's our QA engineer, Chloe, that is based up in Donegal, that we hired at the start of this month. And we are currently hiring for our first account manager, who'll be working with me on sales and customer service. Next year, we'll be hiring 4 or 5 more. And then the year after that, hiring another 12 to 15 at our current projections.
Which means that you're going for growth, which means that you may need to fund again.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah.
You're looking for money?
So we will be looking for money very soon. We're lucky enough that we've raised to date through private investors. And again, a lot of them would be medical investors who live this problem every day, leading radiologists from across Ireland and the UK. We've raised 600,000 to date. We just raised 250,000 through Enterprise Ireland, through HPSU funding, which is unbelievable support for us. And we are going to be launching probably a crowdfunding raise over the next month or two.
I saw that. Who are you going to use for your crowdfunding?
Most likely Spark crowdfunding in
we
Ireland.
We know Spark very well.
Yeah. Chris and the guys over there.
Chris Burridge, yeah.
It's an interesting one. You know, there's an array of funding options out there, primarily looking at angel investors, the likes of HBAN, then Spark crowdfunding up to VC at the moment.
But that's like everybody on the pitch.
Yeah.
You've got to choose.
you've got to choose. For us, we want to be able to raise quickly because with this direction that we are going in, the development of what we're calling an intelligent clinical decision support system, we want to be able to scale up our AI capabilities and our AI partnerships quite quickly. And also with the strategic partnership with the teleradiology company that's going to help us scale across the UK. We need resources for that as well and to get boots on the ground in the UK.
It's a land grab. That's what it's called.
Yes. It is a land grab. And so we want to move quickly and we need to resource that. So in addition to that, a lot of people that we talk about our business, a lot of them have really experienced at a very personal level the issues that we're talking about, have relatives or themselves have had scans that might have missed something or they've been misdiagnosed or whatever the issue might be. So we have a lot of people who feel like they've got a personal invested interest in our business and that have asked us to invest. So we want to give them the opportunity at this stage to do that.
Couple of last questions with some brief answers, please. What could Team GBS, that's our listeners, what could they do for you?
Number one, we're going to be doing a crowdfunding round. So please support us with that if you have the means and the interest to do so. You know, we'd love to have them along with the journey. Any introductions into anybody in the healthcare sector, particularly, you know, GPs, consultants, non-consultant hospital doctors, radiologists. This is a lot more for me and my level of knowledge. I want to talk to everybody and really just get
and
advice.
You can. Talk, I mean.
Sorry. I get very excited. Apologies.
If anybody wants to find you and to give you either money or introductions, where will they contact you?
They can find me on LinkedIn, on
very
Twitter,
active,
where I lurk.
Very active there, yeah.
Very active on LinkedIn. I lurk on Twitter. I love it, but I never post anything, just fearing the onslaught. And our website is xwave.ie.
Final question. Who would you hire in a heartbeat?
I've already taken my shot there, Conal. Recently it was announced that Kieran Lee, one of the founders of Intercom, and their CTO was leaving the business. So I quite cheekily reached out to him and sent him a message and said, look, once you've had a well-deserved break and chilled out and kind of know what you're doing, come back because we'd love to chat to you about joining X-Wave. He very graciously came back to say thanks. Probably not. So he's telling me there's a chance.
I like your thinking. The man's who's thinking I like is a man called Mitchell O'Gorman, who is CEO of X-Wave Technologies. And as he says, you can contact him on LinkedIn, where he's got a very interesting following. All right. Mitchell O'Gorman, thank you so much for joining us on That Great Business Show.
Thanks, Conal.
ISME is the independent SME association, looking after the interests of all types of businesses across Ireland. ISME membership includes invaluable HR and general advice, training, promotional tools, members' discounts, events, and networking with fellow SMEs. ISME membership starts from €195 with easy pay options. ISME. Join today at isme.ie or email membership@isme.ie. ThatGreatBusinessShow.com is brought to you by De Facto Shaving Oil, the best anyone can get. Made in Ireland, sold worldwide. That Great Business Show.
Nobo is an Irish brand of dairy-free ice cream and chocolate, founded in 2012 by a husband and wife team. Until recently, the dynamic duo were doing what all startups do. They were doing it all on their own, trying to expand, putting out fires, raising finance, and dreaming big. As happens, in the last 6 months, things have certainly started going very right for Nobo. They have funded. That in turn allowed them to treble their staff. They're also in the process of moving premises to the very high-profile former Helen Turkington shop in Dublin's Ranelagh suburb. And that will serve as their shop, artisan factory, development centre and world HQ to take on new markets like the Netherlands and Canada, where they have just secured contracts. Oh, and they've also just had their third child, as you do when you're busy. Rachel and Brian Nolan, co-founders of Nobo, you are most welcome to That Great Business Show.
Thank you so much.
Thanks, Connell.
How do you do it all, including the children? I don't want to know that part. Just that it is a lot.
Yeah, it's a bit all right. Yeah.
And you've been banging away since 2012. Overnight success. You know what they always say?
Exactly. That's it. Yeah. Well, back, I mean, 2012 was kind of, it's come, I suppose, hopefully a good distance since then. But I think we'll always say that we're nearly only at the start of our journey, even still with a lot to do. But yeah, back in 2012, we were kind of making our own version of ice cream made from kind of coconut milk and avocado in our apartment kitchen and selling it at farmers' markets at the weekend. So,
and where did the big idea come from?
It's a funny one. We were living in New York, and I'd kind of started reading about nutrition and exploring different things in my diet. And when we moved back to Dublin, we just found there was such a lack of alternatives. Like, there might be dairy-free options, but the first ingredient in them was sugar, and they were just filled with rubbish. And I think where we were coming from was the idea of creating really delicious alternatives from as few ingredients as possible that were all natural and that happened to be also dairy-free. So it started just where I was making desserts using avocado and playing around with things. And then we just had this idea for creating a healthier alternative of ice cream and kind of started from there.
Now, I was on my intro going to start talking about, you know, when you buy a red car, you suddenly see everybody is having a red car. While I was prepping for you, I was reading about companies like Perfect Day and others. You, first of all, you were ahead of the pack in 2012, but now you're just part of the pack because they're all at it. Discuss.
Yeah, I think it was very much when we started, and I remember doing tastings in the supermarkets and people were saying, but if it doesn't have dairy in it, what's it got? Like the concept, they just couldn't get their head around it. And now it's just become so commonplace that when you go into a coffee shop, they have oat milk, they have almond milk, they have soy milk. There's so many different alternatives. So we were probably, if anything, a little bit, as you say, ahead. Like, so it nearly the market hadn't developed as much here. But over the years, it's really kind of caught on. And I think where we still stand apart is on our ingredients. So I think that's where we differentiate ourselves, because there are other dairy-free options, but a lot of them have a lot of rubbish and junk in them. But we just have really pure ingredients. And I think, if anything, it's a benefit to us in the brand.
Yeah, I think as we kind of started out, I think there was a lot of advice and different people to start formulating our base recipe and kind of introducing gums and stabilizers and everything else. And I suppose at that stage, for us, ignorance was bliss in one sense. And we kind of pigheadedly said, oh, surely we can make an ice cream from avocado and coconut milk, and stuck to our guns. And as Ray said, I think that stood to us, because we still do in many ways stand out from the pack, because our chocolate's made from four ingredients, our ice cream's made from four as well. So it's probably the only one of its kind in the world still, which
that is a good claim. Brilliant claim. Now, tell me this, Brian, because I did discuss this with you. You're moving into, a lot of Southsiders in Dublin will know it, the Helen Turkington shop. She's moved up to Sandyford Industrial Estate. I would have thought that it would have been a better place for you and for Nobo to be in an industrial estate, not in a leafy suburb, but you've chosen otherwise. Discuss.
Well, I guess, as Brian touched, we started at farmers markets and we met customers and we got feedback, and that was something that really inspired us and that drove us forward, and that interaction with our customers. And I think putting us in an industrial park, that might suit the manufacturing side, but it doesn't allow us that interface. So we wanted somewhere where we had a lot of passing trade, where people could park, where it would kind of become a destination for healthier treats.
Good luck with parking down there.
Well,
I'll
no, it's
you.
Actually not that bad because we're on the other side. If we were near the Lewis, I think we'd be in trouble. But I think even that people can come and get something and go for a walk in the park, hopefully it'll be somewhere that people will come at the weekend or stroll down, and it's accessible. So it also allows us to do something we've dreamt of, which is have somewhere that we can create different things, you know, whether it's ice cream cakes and cookie sandwiches and different flavors of chocolates and lots of different things we've spoken about over the years. And we'll also have our offices based there. So we'll be based there and we'll have some manufacturing going on as well. So it kind of combines everything, which is amazing.
Ice cream cakes. I remember them when I was little. Do they still make those?
Rachel does.
Yeah. But you make it without ice cream.
Yeah,
or without dairy, should I say.
Yeah.
Good. The big news is that you have broken into, of all places, Canada. Now, when I say of all places, like shipping, do you ship from Ireland to Canada, or are you going to manufacture over there, or what's the model?
So it's just the chocolate in Canada. So we made it a little bit easier for ourselves.
Obviously misunderstood.
Yeah.
And I was thinking, how are they going to do this? So the chocolate, and who is taking it? Whole Foods?
So we're launching to Whole Foods over there as one of our customers in about 3 weeks' time.
Why did they like you?
So, well, it's, from the Canada side, it was, I suppose, about 3 years ago, we started looking at markets that might suit. Obviously, the UK, there were things going on in the UK that made it perhaps less favourable.
Are we talking about Brexit?
Yeah, that word that we won't mention.
And are you in the UK at the moment?
No.
Deliberately? So did you pull out?
Yeah, no, deliberately. We kind of looked at somewhere like Canada was one market we picked, whereby in terms of plant-based and that lifestyle side of things was very prevalent, but yet we felt the market wasn't quite developed yet. The competition would be a major, if you go further south down to California and that coast, that there's competition would be rife, but from when we looked at it, there was an opportunity in Canada.
And you say looked at it, and I'm always interested, and also on behalf of the listeners, always want to know about, well, where do you look?
Well, we're fortunate. We actually, Bord Bia are a huge source of research and information for us.
And they've got the library.
They do, and
the
they also
famous library.
But they do, and they also have offices in most regions, and are more than willing to do kind of on the ground market research and provide with reports. So they're a big source of information for us, and even just ourselves, just going online and kind of having our own look at things.
But when you say you go and look, I mean, do you go to Canada physically when you can, go to the shelves, look? But that's fine. You've now found out that, they're not so good as ours. But then what's the knocking on the door stuff?
So the way that happened is there was a kind of, we kind of again targeted the key distributors. The way the market works over there is you'd get an agent. I didn't know that at the time when we were looking at the distributors, but we went looking for distributors.
I'll stop you there. You didn't know that at the time.
No, I'll tell you.
But is Bord Bia not meant to tell you that?
Well, beforehand? They were doing the market research bit. So in terms of getting into the market, we approached the key distributor. We're called Horizon for our type of product over there. We sent them samples. It was a cold call. They asked for samples, sent them samples. They loved the product.
It was your cold call to them.
Yeah, correct. And then they said, but the way it works over here is you need an agent, and that's how everything works. This is a list of 15 agents we work with. We looked at the agents, picked the top three, again, that worked with our type of product, got in touch with number one, Nick from Atlas Brand Management, who is now our agent, who loved the product as well. And that's how we got in there. Funnily enough, that was about 2.5 years ago. We only launched with Horizon, that distributor, in about 2 weeks' time. So we actually got a listing with another distributor. And then it kind of went from there. So we actually have been in the market, but only really in the coming month or so are we kind of elevating it to kind of a serious number of stores and flagship stores such as Whole Foods.
And I don't know anything at all about Whole Foods in Canada. Is it a big load of stores? Or
not a lot of stores, only about 13 stores. But okay, in terms of a flagship, in terms of a place where you want your brand to be seen, like it is in other markets, it's where other stores would look, other distributors would look. So it's an important one to get.
And that is the chocolate. So Rachel, head of development, are you? Is that what you'd like to be called amongst many other things?
Yeah.
Can you develop further products that will sell, that you have seen, that you say, God, that's the one for Canada? Because you're also in the Netherlands, aren't you?
Yeah.
Is the Netherlands one different again, or the market there? I love the differences between markets.
Mm. Yeah. And we're still learning, so it's all very nuanced. But again, with the Netherlands, we're working with a partner that's based over there, and we've initially launched it online, and it's going to be going into kind of the same way we've done here, into independent stores, cafes, kind of building up a bit of momentum and then looking for some larger listings after that. But I think we're finding the business is moving more towards the chocolate now. So it's actually overtaken the ice cream, and that's probably where we see the growth coming from.
That's very interesting.
Yeah.
It's obviously an easier product to work with.
It is easier, and it's funny. Probably had we started with the chocolate, we probably never would have gone into ice cream because frozen. It's very difficult. But we've learned a lot through the frozen channels, and it still does very well. And I think there's a lot more that we can do. But the new product development and the opportunities around the chocolate are kind of in front of us, so we can kind of see the opportunity there, and we're working on.
Whisper in my ear now. What are you developing in the chocolate area? She's looking very, very cagey.
I know. I mean, I think I can say like things we've looked at and are looking at around kind of more treats, moving into slightly more snacking. So using nut butters and combining them with the chocolate to kind of create nut butter cups and a few different things around that. I can't give too much away.
That's okay. And I appreciate that. We are pro-business and we're here to protect your business. But you are moving in, as you say, into a different area, which brings all those problems of distribution. We leave the Canada and Netherlands aside. Just something simple, distribution in Ireland. Are you wheeling it around on your own trailers, or have you got a distributor?
We did. So again, as the business has developed, at the very start, there was no other option. So we were delivering it into stores ourselves. We had a little freezer van that we were driving around the place.
I'd say you loved that, did you?
Yeah. Well, the benefit is that in terms of the customer-facing opportunity and meeting the store owners and all that kind of thing, which you do...
But time.
I know. Yeah. Well, time, and also even as simple as account management. Suddenly you have a list of kind of 60 or 70 customers when it comes to invoicing and chasing money, all that kind of thing, whereby now the model is we have about 4 key distributors. So we've essentially, in the whole business, we only have about 8 or 9 customers, which is a lot easier to manage. Yeah, exactly. So we have distributors and they all have their specialized channels. So we have a distributor for the health stores, we have a distributor for the independents, and then we're also in multiples in terms of we're downstairs in Tesco, and that's direct into Tesco. So less customers and I suppose more focus, and allows us to do other things.
Tesco, we've had people on the podcast before who are Tesco customers, and Tesco has been good. And I always give shout outs to companies that will bring product, say, to the UK, where they are obviously massive. Has there been that discussion yet? I'm going to watch your two faces now to see, was there a discussion yet about bringing you to the UK through Tesco? Stum silence.
I don't think that's...
Oh, come on, yet. Tesco.
Yeah.
It must be. But, now, could you handle it, though? Because...
Well, that's the thing. Yeah. It's also about, I suppose, putting those building blocks in place. So making sure we get the Irish business operating to its maximum is key. And then maybe that's a next step. But
what is the chocolate? I forgot to ask you the obvious question. What is the chocolate called? Is it Nobo's?
Yeah, correct.
And Nobo, of course, for those who don't know the story, Nobo is no cow.
Yeah,
correct. So so in terms of the chocolate, the whole thing around that was trying to create a version of a milk chocolate without any milk. So it's, I suppose, dark chocolates would typically be plant-based, would have less sugar. But I think customers often seek that kind of indulgent feeling from a creamy kind of milk chocolate. So it took us about 2 years to develop it.
We spoken like a salesman.
Well, I've said this a few times.
And when you're at home, does the business ever shut off?
No, we'd be lying if we said it's not. So but I often
you're
say
sitting in the kitchen or whatever, and you're chatting and say, "Did John Smith pay?" Or I've got a new recipe. What's the chat? Because I do know anybody's in business talks the business morning, noon and night. Doesn't matter what it is.
But I suppose I try to say to people, it's so different because it's like when you have children, you talk about your children. Like it's not something you don't want. Yeah, it is. It really is, because it's just part of your life and you're kind of, it becomes part, you don't even know any different. So, I don't know. But we enjoy talking about it as well.
Now I'm looking at you, Rachel. Tell the truth. I bet you the kids love milk, real milk.
No, I think we've actually done them a disservice because our first won't touch milk. And I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing, but he's like things. And our second has allergies, so he's actually allergic to milk and eggs. So I don't know whether it's a good thing or not.
But actually, that might have been hen and egg. Sorry to use that. Is that possibly you, the mum, knew that this was so, my own family would have those kinds of allergies.
Yeah.
And one in particular who could not, as little teeny little baby, couldn't take any milk.
Yeah.
I screamed and screamed until he got orange juice. And then he stopped crying.
Really?
There you go now. Oh. Anyway, they're going to go off and make fake orange juice.
Need to explore that.
Now, back to the business and about the growth, because you have also funded.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Talk to me about the funding.
Yeah, so about 6 months ago, we brought investors on board.
Now, what was the process there? Did you go knocking on doors, or did you sit down and say, we need money?
Not really. I mean, we had kind of, I suppose, been in touch with these individuals over the last number of years, and they were on the same page as us, same values, saw the same ambition and vision as the business. So in many ways, it kind of organically came out of that. We didn't do any round looking for financing from that perspective. So I think it's in some ways it's different to how other businesses have gone about it. But I think our timing was, I suppose it's 7 years after we started, but there's a whole journey from there until we raised money that I suppose we could see, and we wanted to bring the business a certain distance, but then I suppose becoming acutely aware that to get it to where our ultimate ambition and vision is.
Which is? Needed,
well, to be a worldwide player in
is
health
it really?
Food. Yeah.
I mean, at some stage you're going to get tired. Because
I don't know how much more tired we can get.
I hope I don't get any more tired.
But you are working against huge brands. Now, we're not talking about the Cadburys, because they're not in your space. Who would be the big, big, big players in your direct space?
In confectionery?
But let's assume that you will. That's where the business is going ahead.
Well, I suppose the interesting thing is the likes of Ben and Jerry's, and that they've actually started launching their own vegan and dairy-free offerings. So most of the big players now have an alternative that traditionally you wouldn't have seen. But I don't know, I suppose like Alpro, those kind of bigger brands, or Oatly, that would be big success stories.
Have any of them come calling yet?
No, not yet. But I guess, I suppose what we're excited about as well with the Dunville Avenue and that space is that there's an element of when, as you grow your business, you're kind of selling into more channels, and that becomes the focus. And for us, I think creativity and being able to develop new products has always really excited us, but they kind of start to conflict a little bit. So this will give us that kind of creative outlet and kind of be able to keep things interesting on a personal level. And then I think it'll also support the growth of the brand as we move into their markets.
And the brand and the graphic is actually lovely. It's very distinctive. Yeah. Who created that for you?
That's actually John, Brian's brother, who's part of the business as well. And
well done, John, who's part of the business. I presume he's John Nolan.
John Nolan,
correct, he's actually a full-time architect as well. So he'd talk about someone not getting any sleep. I think it's him, to be honest. But he's very talented.
Yeah, and that whole identity and that kind of paired back minimal look all comes John. Yeah, so.
Whose idea was Nobo?
We often talk about this. I think it just came out in conversation.
You claim.
You take it.
Okay, thanks. Yeah, so I think that was,
So you fund it.
Yeah.
You're in Dunville Avenue, which is the old Turkington building. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then you have now gone to 7. Is that what you told me?
Correct, yeah. So it's funny, from kind of 6 or 7 months ago to two of us in the business to now 7, with I think another 2 starting in the next 3 or 4 weeks.
Are you hiring?
We are, yeah. So
if you're putting out a call, you better put it out on that great business show.
Yeah, absolutely.
And what are you looking for?
A number of things. So I think the best thing is to go to our website, www.nobo.ie. Yeah, no need to say the www there. But anyway, and we have a career section on there. So the number of key hires we're looking for, and would appreciate.
And we are, as I think I may have told you, Team GBS. Team GBS backs the companies that come on. What can they do? Are there stores or places in Ireland or wherever else the podcast is listened to, which is actually worldwide now? Anybody that can help you? What do you need? What would you like?
Well, actually, the hiring is one key thing. So if you go on the site, that's important. But I think also awareness. I mean, we're very proud of the products we're creating and feel like nobody else is doing it. So trying to get our name out there still is very important. For us, and then also any stores or customers that do want to stock our product, again, hello@nobo.ie is probably the best place to go to get in touch.
You know what? I'm not a believer in that hello one or info at. I never believe anybody looks at it.
Yeah, we do.
Why don't you say Rachel O'Brien?
Rachel O'Brien. As well. Yeah.
Now, there is one final thing that I hope that you got on your email is that we do ask, which is the hire in a heartbeat. You can either do it collectively as to whom you might hire in a heartbeat to join the business, or you can do it individually. Which do you want to go with?
I think we had a kind of coming together on this.
Oh, thank God. You read the email.
Yeah, we did.
I might have had somebody very recently who didn't.
No, really.
Not naming any names. So, who?
So, I guess the person we came up with, which I don't think he's going to have time to talk to us, but is Yvonne Chouinard, who is one of the founders of Patagonia. And I think was his story that has been really inspirational to us in terms of his sustainability message, but also in how he's built a culture in his business. And you might like to talk to him.
Yeah, well, just when I suppose we're trying to think of someone that we would love to get into the business, even for a few weeks, as we build out the team, as I just said, we've only started really building a team in essence now, that culture, myself and Rachel talk about kind of every day about how to build that culture and how important it is. So having the likes of Yvonne Chouinard, who is infamous and for creating one of the best corporate cultures that anyone has really seen.
Is he the guy who's also invested a huge amount into saving a lot of South America? Did he buy a whole heap of it?
So,
you know who else you should listen to is on the podcast is episode 14 or 15, Tony Smurfit, about building a team. Mm. Now, I know he has 46,000, but it's the same lessons apply. So it's well worth, he gave an hour plus of his time and it's really, really interesting. So worth your while to listen back to the podcast for once. Listen, Brian and Rachel Gravina Mag to come on That Great Business Show, and they are of Nobo. Nobo.ie will get them, and continued success.
So, thank you so much.
You're very, very welcome. And that is it from That Great Business Show, episode 47. My thanks, as always, to the team here at that Dublin Podcast Studios in Dublin 14, home of the world's best podcast sound. Today's sound engineer was ice cream fan Rob Curry. Peter Rice will sprinkle some hundreds and thousands on us later on. See what I did there? I try to work that in all the time. My thanks to Tom Murphy of De Facto for recommending Aaron Hannan. Mitchell O'Gorman was sent to us by, and I cannot remember, PR Gillian Wright sent us Rachel and Brian Nolan, so thanks to Gillian. And if you know of a great business that should be on That Great Business Show, please send details to producer at thatgreatbusinessshow.com. Lots of businesses are starting their own podcasts. That's our business. So if you'd like us to produce world-class podcasts for you, contact us right away. And we also want your ads. We're delighted to have ISME on board now. And if you would want to talk to Ireland's SME community, That Great Business Show is the way to do it. Email producer at thatgreatbusinessshow.com, where you can find out all about our advertising packages. Finally, my thanks to our sponsor, DeFactoShave.com, the world's best shaving oil. Try it for just a week, and like me, you will be a forever convert. So for me, Conal O'Moran, until next week, Slán tomhán.